Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Working Media. This is the podcast where professional journalists offer insight and advice to aspiring reporters about making it in the news media industry. My name's Adrian Ma, I'm your host, and I'm a journalism professor at Ryerson University in Toronto. This podcast is presented in partnership with JSource, the English language portal of the Canadian Journalism Project. I am very pleased to introduce our next guest, Mr. Elamine Abdel-Mahmoud. He is currently the social media editor at BuzzFeed Canada. We had a really great chat about him getting his start in radio and then moving into the digital realm, and all the challenges involved in keeping up with how incredibly fast things move in the social media world. Without further ado, this is my conversation with Elamine. Elamine.
Hey.
How you doing, man?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you for asking. Okay, so we are with you at the BuzzFeed Canada offices.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a great environment. Yeah, so just it is a bit of a frenetic environment. So podcast listeners, if you hear footsteps or yelling or bantering, perhaps even bickering.
We do get into some fights.
You get into some fights.
Yes.
Then pay no mind. Just listen to the wonderful insights that this man is about to share with us.
Don't worry about the family fighting in the background.
No. Yeah. It's all love. So, Elamine, you are the social media editor at BuzzFeed Canada.
Yes.
So you specialize in content strategy. You've really dug deep into the digital side of journalism. But I first want to talk about where you started. And I think, like many of us who entered this business, you got into this through campus media, right? Like you started working. You did, okay.
Did.
So Queen's University is where you did your, yes.
I know the podcast listeners can't see this, but I just lifted my fist up in the air to salute Queen's University.
Queen.
Yeah, at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, sorry, I cut you off.
No. So you got into radio. Is that right?
Yeah.
Right, so tell us how that got started for you.
Yeah, man. Radio was a first love way back at Queen's University. I sort of began working with CFRC 101.9 FM. If you're listening in Kingston, please listen to it.
Shout out to Kingston.
Yeah, Kingston. Also the hometown. And I started there working on the news team. And for me, working in an environment that was a community radio station, which is to say its job was to cover stories that other people were not covering, was electric, was so much fun, you know? And so I sort of gravitated towards doing that kind of work. Now, having said that, I didn't really plan on pursuing journalism after leaving university. Wasn't the plan at all. I applied to some policy schools. I didn't get into policy schools. And then I sort of was like, well, I guess I'm going to have to, you know, survive somehow.
Right.
And I'm very happy to sort of have picked journalism afterwards. But it wasn't the original plan.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, covering any particularly interesting stories, was it kind of like this aha moment for you when you're in the radio station working with your colleagues? I feel like a lot of us, when we get into this, who aren't, you know, sure that we want to be journalists, usually it kind of just comes about that there's this moment where you kind of remember very clearly, like you're like, yes, this is this feeling or whatever I'm feeling right now is what I want to kind of experience. Did you have that?
Totally. Spring of 2009.
All right.
You know, that was, but listen, this was when I was doing CFRC. I was like, this is a lot of fun. Like there's a thrill involved in this. And that was when we were covering, and by we, I mean the radio station, but it was just me at 6 in the morning covering, an incredibly local story about the shutting down of these farms that were attached to the prison in Kingston. Now the farms provided jobs for the prisoners, you know, a lot of prisoner advocates, in Kingston were like, this is an amazing rehabilitation program. And so, you know, the corrections decided to shut them down and there was a massive protest. Like people showed up, we're talking like chained themselves to trucks, you know? And they wanted to prevent the cows from leaving. I'm not kidding. They wanted to prevent the cows from leaving the premises. And people were crying in the street. And there was no other news organization there. There was just no one. And that's sort of that's like a super local journalism moment, you know? Like very few other outlets are there. The Globe and Mail are tweeting me. And they're like, hey, can we use your photos? I'm like, well, why don't you send somebody down here? And I think that moment was like, this could be, you know, something that I really enjoy doing with the rest of my life. I still wanted to do policy, and I'm a little bit bitter that I didn't get into policy school.
Yeah.
But it sort of became very clear to me afterwards. I was like, you know, actually journalism is the thing I want to do, which is to say, bringing conversations to people and saying, this is something we should really talk about, is the thing I want to do. Like, I'm most interested in curating the kinds of conversations we have and the ways that we have them.
Yeah.
And my job very luckily lets me do that.
That was your journalistic spring awakening, if you will.
Absolutely. Yes.
So you didn't get in a policy score right away, see, but you decided, okay, so I'm gonna see how this journalism thing works out. Totally. So is that what brought you to George Strombolopoulos tonight?
Yeah.
Okay.
I went to a few tapings of George Strombolopoulos tonight after I moved to Toronto. Still hopeful that I'll get into policy school at that moment. Mm. And I went to these tapings and I just really enjoyed the environment, what it was like, you know. Really great conversations. I'm still sad to this day that show ended because it was so good and it filled a large hole, a large gap in Canadian cultural landscape. And I saw someone in the corner and she was sort of calling the shots and telling people what to do. And I was like, I'm going to go talk to her and be like, hey, I've done some radio stuff. Do you have any jobs? And that woman was Tanya Natchev. And she was like, no, we don't have any jobs. But she made the mistake of giving me her email.
Yeah,
And boy, was that a mistake.
Yeah, you capitalized on that.
You don't even know. I think I emailed Tanya probably once every 3 weeks until she gave me a job. Like, it was something like that.
Right.
But eventually she was like, listen, I don't have like a full-time job.
No.
I have a 30-day contract.
Right.
Because we really need some help in terms of, we need, you know, an AP to sort of pick up the slack on this little area. And I was like, that's it. I'm in. I'm down. Let's do this. The 30-day contract turned into a 3-month contract. And then the season ended. And I was like, hey, seasons end on TV shows. What doesn't have seasons? And the answer to that is the news. So transitioning to the news side was strictly a decision of wanting to live and recognizing that needing to live doesn't have seasons. And so I was like,
It would be amazing if we could hibernate.
Yeah, right? It'd be incredible. Just,
yeah,
but we can't.
No.
And so, you know, while a show is on hiatus in the summer, I'm like, hey, really feel like I need to eat and pay rent and stuff. And so I sort of I had a few conversations with people within the CBC, and the National was hiring for a part-time sort of researcher position. And that was sort of my transitioning into news.
Right. Yeah. Which brought you, yes, to the National. And so you were still at that point kind of more on the broadcast side of things?
Yes.
Yeah, very much so.
For sure.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed doing broadcast stuff. But the other thing that I was really enjoying was a little show called The Agenda with Steve Bacon.
Yeah.
Which to date, you know, is one of the best current affairs TV shows in this country. The depth, you know, the length that they give into for stories.
I'm sure it appealed to the policy geek within.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and if you talk to any policy nerd, like, they're all like, you know, the best show is The Agenda with Steve Bacon. Mm. And the reason for that is because they get two of the most knowledgeable people to, you know, on the topic. And they don't say, hey, talk for 6 minutes. They say, how about we talk about this for an hour? You know, how about we talk about this for 25 minutes? It's just not something that you see a lot, you know, throughout the rest of the TV landscape. And so while I was at the National, I was sort of really interested in transitioning to, or just more keeping tabs, you know, on what was happening at the Agenda. I got in touch with the executive producer at the time, Dan Dunsky, and I was like, listen, I don't know what you guys need, but I can do, you know, the things that I'm interested in are online journalism. I'm interested in social media. And he was like, well, we do need a little bit of help on our social media side. And that was sort of my first foray into working for specifically on the online side of things anywhere.
Yeah.
I was the online producer for The Agenda. And then that sort of transitioned into a social media role for TVO's current affairs and documentaries overall. So,
well, especially that point in time, too. I mean, there's a lot of time at that point in time in your career, a lot of kind of content units and shows were just kind of dipping their toes into this stuff. So you must have had a pretty good kind of carte blanche to do things and try things out.
That's exactly it, right? It was sort of the right moment because, you know, you have TV shows that are like, wow, we need to start taking online stuff seriously. We need to figure out the best ways to promote our content online. because people aren't just waking up and then like coming to tvo.org or theglobeandmail.com or whatever websites. They're transitioning to coming to content mostly through social channels. And so if you're going to get the views, if you're going to get the audience to actually just engage with the things that you're creating at all, that's going to have to start playing a much larger role. And so that was the perfect moment, right? Like the perfect moment of coming in and be like, I have these skills, and the proof is in my own personal social media channels. So you should let me do this, but for you instead of, you know, the other stuff that I tweet. And it worked out, you know? I'm also very conscious of the fact that it doesn't work out for everyone, right? Yeah. Like this is not a pitch that everyone is able to make, or just because of timing, because of access, right? Not everyone gets their email answered. I am fully aware of that kind of thing because it worked out for me, but it's not gonna necessarily work out for everyone. My point though is it was worth trying. It was worth trying to have a conversation with a place that's like, hey, you clearly need this gap filled. How can I help with it? How can I be the person to fill that particular gap?
So that's a really interesting point in that, it sounds like you believe that, you know, your opportunities are in part due to luck.
Yes.
But also, what advice may you have on becoming that person who gets that lucky? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Was there anything that you felt you did or you learned to do that helped kind of put you over the top and really let you take advantage of that opportunity?
I'm one of those people who will email everyone that I'm interested in talking to and be like, hey, can we have coffee? And when I do that, I'm not looking to pitch myself as a potential employee. What I'm looking for is for them to reveal all their secrets. Mm-hmm. And then I go back in reverse. So here's the process, right? We're going to go out for coffee and then I'm going to be like, hey, tell me about everything that you guys do. And then I'll go home and then re-engineer my resume to be like, I am the perfect person for everything that you just told me you do. And so I would say that like, the job seeking process, the small hack that you can do is go find out what they want first and then put that in your resume. Like put those right. skills, if you have them, put them in your resume. Because there's no sense in like spending hours and days and weeks on a resume that you present and they're like, we're looking for none of these things. And so to get that lucky, one of the things that I did was sort of reverse engineer that process. Have the conversation first, and then be like, hey, is that a right fit for me? Can I do those things? And if I can, like, I will put them literally at the top of my resume. Be like, these are all the things that you said that you're interested in. Guess who's got them? This guy.
That's a great hack, man. That's good.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that. Is that okay if I use that?
No, by all means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this kind of gets us to now where we are now. So how did you end up going from TVO to coming to BuzzFeed?
Right. Listen, before coming to BuzzFeed, I was a big fan of BuzzFeed. So were so many people. And BuzzFeed launching in Canada was a huge deal, right? So the reason I was interested in BuzzFeed was because they were really pioneers, and we still are pioneers. I say they like I don't work here. I believe this company was a pioneer in terms of getting people to consume content through a particular content strategy that is like, you don't have to come to our website. You don't have to come to the place where we live in order to consume the content that we make. That is not a thing that we ask of you. It'd be nice if you do, but we'll make sure that all of this content is available to you wherever you are, whether it's Instagram, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook. The idea is you get as much of the story as possible on those platforms. And like, we have teams that do that, right? Like, we have teams that take a news story and be like, how can we tell this story on an Instagram story? How do we tell this story in a Twitter thread? So that it's like, we get it. Like, what you're doing is you're living on your social media apps and you want to keep scrolling. Most people don't want to leave social media apps to go to websites. Most companies have the data to prove this. And so working within that, BuzzFeed was one of the leading companies in terms of being like, okay, we'll meet people where they are, like, and adopting that as a serious sort of content strategy. And so for me, that was an interest. That was a really big interest when they sort of started to move into the country. Craig Silverman, who used to be the head of BuzzFeed Canada, he now is a media editor for BuzzFeed News, was sort of a contact person for this. And so I did the regular things that you do, which is, you know, I followed him on Twitter. But then I also decided to add him on Facebook. And the reason I decided to do that is because if I was going to be a social media editor for BuzzFeed Canada, my thought was, I want this person to see how I run my social media. That worked. That is also a gamble, and I'm aware of that, right? And not everyone is comfortable making that decision. And so the thought being, on top of communicating that I understand what BuzzFeed is trying to do with social media, I also wanted to be like, and like, here's like a live example of how I do this, of how I run my own sort of channels. And that that did it, I guess. Because after 2 years and a bit at TVO, I came here to BuzzFeed, right. BuzzFeed Canada.
Did you send a thank you note to Mark Zuckerberg?
I did not. Yeah. Maybe I should. Yeah, it's long overdue.
All right, that sounds awesome. So this podcast is all about offering aspiring journalists some key insights into getting their careers going. One question I ask all our guests is this: what do you know now that you wish you knew when you first got your start in this industry?
Literally no one cares if you email them and ask them for advice, right? Like, the worst thing they'll do is delete your email. Mm. The best thing they'll do is respond to you with 500 words about what you should do. You have nothing, literally nothing to lose by asking people for advice. Mm. And most people want to give it, like, because I don't know. I think I try to sort of think back to when I was trying to break into the industry, and looking at people being like, hey, those people have pretty dope jobs that I really want. My thought was like, I'm not going to bother that person. I don't want to be a bother on that person's radar. But like, most people in those jobs don't think of themselves as like, they're in positions where like, I'm too high above, like, you know, helping people, because they themselves got their start somehow, and they want to share that journey and they want to share how they got there. And so I used to be quite hesitant about, I guess, blanket bombing people's inboxes with like, hey, need your help. Hey, need your help. Don't be annoying about it. And like, I don't know, be respectful of people's time, but like, ask for help. People want to help. They really, really do. They don't mind helping. I wish I knew that. I wish I knew that before, because it would have saved my time. It would have cut my time in half, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. So your job, let's talk about that a little bit, because social media, let's talk about it. Social media, I think, is a really fascinating area because, you know, you've obviously really, you know, you got your start in kind of more traditional forms of you know, broadcast media, and you really embraced into the digital side of the equation. But social media feels like this one area where the changes are even more fast and furious than some other types of digital journalism.
Yeah,
you got to be mindful of how people are using technologies, how audiences shift and adapt, even the vernacular, right? The language is constantly evolving.
Yeah.
So, it's like a full-time job in and of itself just to be learning about social media. So how do you keep on top of trends, you know, as a part of this job?
How do I keep on top of trends? One of the things I do is maintain my mental health by not going on social media all the time. And like, I don't know if that sounds counterintuitive, but like, I try to, like, for the most part, I take weekends off social media. I don't tweet as much, if I do at all, unless, like, I don't know, the sky falls. But for the most part, like, what that does is give me the distance to have some judgment about whether some new trend is a thing that's going to last and is interesting to investigate, or it's something that is totally passing. Because so much of social media is so much noise, and people trying to create types of content and ways of engaging people, like, they just don't last, right? Apps and platforms that are gone within a week. You really have to figure out what has staying power, what has staying power potential, and what doesn't. And I think that comes from sort of maintaining a healthy distance from social media, looking at it as like an evolving project. I think some people get a little bit too deep and they think they have to, you know, speak the new way that people are speaking every single day. And if they don't have an article on every single trending topic that comes out, then they're like behind the ball. And like, I don't think so. I think for me, social media is a thing that evolves quickly, but a lot slower than most people think.
That is so interesting to me, because I think that a lot of people feel like,
to really get to know social media, you must, you know, just kind of immerse yourself in it all the time. And what you're saying is, no, take a step back and think about, you know, how you're using it, and think about whether something has staying power.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, if a tweet is popular, try to, I mean, this is something that I try to do all the time. It's like, if I see a popular tweet or a popular thread from someone, I sort of try to reverse engineer it. Try to be like, well, what is it about this that really worked? So, you know, one of the leading places on Twitter is, for me, a nonprofit that's called ProPublica. And ProPublica do Twitter threads better than literally anyone. I truly aspire to ProPublica level threads because they create these threads that are so like narratively gripping. They're just kind of like, here's a story and here's why you're really going to care about it. It has a lot more to do with the craft of the story and why you should care than it is about some embracing some sort of trend. Whereas you see a lot of trends that just don't, they just don't last. Like, maybe you'll get some good retweets on a day, but for the most part, like, people will move on and be like, this is not interesting, you know? And so, I don't know, it comes with, it's certainly a language. Social media is a language that you have to sort of learn to speak somewhat fluently. And for that to happen, you gotta be present and on it and sort of monitoring it, you know? But don't be obsessed about it. Like, don't obsess about the things, don't obsess about every little thing that you see on it, because I think that's like a very shortcut, very quick shortcut to going crazy.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
So I guess just kind of thinking recently about what you've been looking at and what you've been sort of investigating, are there a few things happening in social media right now that really pique your interest that you think may have some staying power or some really interesting storytelling potential?
You know, I think the next thing that we have to sort of figure out is, how do we do audio on social media? How do we do audio effectively on social media? We haven't really figured that out yet. No one's really cracked that to like an effective degree. And so I'm sort of like keeping track of like how Vox is doing it, for example. They do some interesting stuff with audio on their Twitter account. But I don't know. I think that'll be an interesting frontier, because for the most part, the podcast universe, you know, and the social media universe have sort of existed a little bit far apart. And as you start to blend those, there's just so much content that comes out of the podcasting universe that's fascinating and will play super well on social media. But we just haven't gotten there yet. Mostly because the platforms themselves don't lend themselves to sharing audio very well. So I'm sort of curious about the evolution of that.
Yeah. Great. So do you have any other, thinking about, because you probably get contacted all the time from younger, student journalists, aspiring journalists.
Sure.
Do you have any, suggestions in general or advice about people that just really, really want to break into this industry, maybe even particularly as getting involved in social media work?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my biggest advice would be to sort of develop a voice. It doesn't have to be my voice. I try to be sort of...
By the way, your voice is so silky smooth, you could be a...
my nighttime jazz DJ. Hello, you're listening to 91.8. No, I don't know.
That's pro level. That's good.
Thank you. That's very kind. Try to develop a voice on social media that is reflective of you and the companies you're hoping to work for, right? That's going to be different for you than everybody else. I always sort of, when people ask me to describe the BuzzFeed Canada voice, I sort of try to say that like it's like sounds like a really smart and really engaged and really informed sort of 16-year-old girl. Like that's sort of like the voice description, which is to say like pretty willing to share news with memes. You know what I mean? Like don't be, I'm not afraid of that. But other companies might be like, that is not a thing that we might do. I don't know where you want to work, you know? My advice would be to watch them, watch what they're doing, and see how you could add your own personal voice to it, because that would really work for you.
Sounds great. And I guess just kind of wrapping things up, what worlds remain to conquer for you?
Right. What worlds remain to conquer? That's a fun one. That's a fun question. Here's the thing. I wear a few hats at BuzzFeed. So I'm social media editor for BuzzFeed Canada, but one of the 50%, 80% of my time, I spend 50 to 80%, depending on the day, is spent on our morning newsletter. So I get up at 4 a.m. to write a newsletter for BuzzFeed News, which is super dope.
Newsletters are so back in.
Yeah.
I love it.
Big time. Having a huge moment. Yeah. And we have an incredibly engaged subscriber base who get really mad at me sometimes and be like, hey, man, where, you know, I see you making fun of Kanye and I don't appreciate it or whatever. And I love that. So but I've only been doing newsletters for about 4 or 5 months or so. And so this is new for me. Like, I really love it. And one of the nice things about being a BuzzFeed is that, like, a new thing is introduced into my role. It's like, something's rotated out, something's rotated in every few months. And I really love that about working here. So I'm like, kind of trying to embrace this newsletter moment and be like, what could we do with this? It sounds like a lot of fun. Especially because of what you just said, which is that newsletters are super back in. I realized that, like, the newsletter that I put together is one of several that will show up in people's inboxes. So I've been sort of trying to work on crafting the voice for it, crafting what it should sound like, the ways it informs people in the morning. And that has been like a total thrill. But then the other part of it is that, like, one thing that we're learning is that my newsletter audience really loves explainers, like, really love it when some new big thing happens and you're like, this new big thing happened, but you might not have the background. Let me just walk all this back to you so you can understand the full context of the thing that just happened. And we're talking about maybe turning part of those into video. And I'm interested in seeing what it looks like when I do that on camera. I don't know. So those are worlds to conquer. I do occasional panels on CBC. And so, like, I'm not unfamiliar with being on camera, but being on camera in my own voice might be fascinating.
Well, best of luck to you in those endeavors. Thanks so much for talking to us today, brother.
My pleasure. I hope this was helpful.
It was great. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks.
Once again, I'd like to thank Elamine for taking the time to hang out with us today. The technical producer of Working Media is Nicole DiDonato, and our executive producer is Haley Watson. This podcast is in partnership with JSource. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.